Mr. T continues on KNBR, the sports leader.
Love his toughness. Love his all-out style. The volume of work he's done on the field speaks for itself. And impeccable guy in the field and off as well.
You know, he's a very, very, very intense coach. And, you know, I just wanted to play him. I wanted to beat him. Every time he played, and it was like an extra passion that I just want to beat him, you know. That's how I felt all the time, you know, because they're so aggressive. You know, they took pride in the whole aggressive nature.
That was the head coach of the San Francisco 49ers, Jim Harbaugh, and their second-round pick, LaMichael James. We have just hooked up with the coach of the San Francisco 49ers, Jim Harbaugh. Coach, what's going on?
Oh, hanging in there, Tom. How you doing?
Doing fantastic. And before we get to the Niners and the draft and all that stuff, I was just curious just to get your thoughts on, you know, what happened with Junior Seau passing.
Well, it's very sad. Very sad by hearing the news. Situations of this nature create the ultimate feeling of inadequacy. When we're not present to support our fellow man during their ultimate time in need. And, you know, thinking about Junior and the kind of person that he was, I mean, he was always there for teammates, for friends, for his community. And, you know, sad that I wasn't there like he'd always been for all of his teammates and friends, and, you know, for me when I played there in San Diego. And he was the kind of teammate that he was always the first one to greet you when you came aboard, whether you were a rookie or an aging veteran. Always, he just had time for everybody, you know, from the lowest guy in the totem pole right up to the owner and everybody in between. And it's just a very sad, sad time. And, you know, my family's thoughts and prayers go out to Junior and his family.
Hey, Jim, having been a player in this league and knowing how violent the sport is, and certainly I'm not going to speculate on what happened to Junior Seau because we don't know, but there have been a lot of players in this league that have played, Tom McHale, Terry Long, Andre Waters, John Grimsley, among others, that when they did the autopsy, they had this CTE, which is chronic traumatic, and I can't pronounce the last word, so I won't even try. But it's something that can't be diagnosed, and it's something you can only find out after someone passes away. And I know there's more to it than that. I mean, there's stress. These guys deal with depression. I think the limelight of the game, you miss that when you're gone. You've always had a schedule for yourself as a pro athlete, and then all of a sudden that is gone as well. Does the NFL, do you think the NFL needs to do more? Is there more to be done and just trying to evolve and make the game? I don't know how much more safer you can make it, Jim, but whether it be seminars or symposiums after the playing career is done to try and make that transition to after NFL life maybe a little more seamless.
We've talked about a lot of factors there, and, you know, try to think of all the pieces that, you know, could lead somebody to believe that was their best recourse to, you know, find a solution. If that in case is, you know, what turns out to be, you know, the cause of death with Junior Seau, it's hard to fathom, and wouldn't begin to be able to answer that question, yeah. Tom. And I just keep and you know, friends of Junior's that I've talked to, and people that played with him and know him, you know, as well or even better than myself. You know, you just this feeling, this searing in your gut that you wish you would have known. You wish you would have known that maybe he was in a place that he was in. And if he'd have told one guy, there would have been 100 guys on his doorstep. Yeah. I mean, that's how fast the news would have traveled, and thousands of guys would have been there. And it's just feel frail, feel inadequate that, what wasn't present, to support, you know, a teammate, you know, a fellow man during his ultimate time of need.
Talking to the head coach of the San Francisco 49ers, Jim Harbaugh, I'm curious, outside of just watching the game, studying the game, what helps you become a better coach outside of football, whether it's watching other sports, whether it's talking to coaches of other sports, watching something on TV, reading books that maybe don't even pertain to football? I mean, how do you keep, because we always say if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. How do you continue to evolve and get better as a football coach?
Well, a lot of things you mentioned there, thinking, you know, a lot, you know, you're thinking better, thinking of ways to teach better, you know, to, you know, with the circumstances that you're presented, different players that come onto your roster, you know, thinking about how we can use their talents and put them in a position to be successful, you know, like chess,
mm-hmm.
you know, trying to think a move ahead, two moves ahead, three, four. If we could just possibly think four moves ahead or five moves ahead, then we'd be in pear tree. You know, we're not going to be like, don't have the capability to be like Bobby Fischer and be thinking 12 moves ahead. But you definitely, you know, reading is knowledge. As you stated, you know, on sports psychology, on motivation, on watching the tape, always. I mean, it's the best job in the world.
Yeah.
You know, for me, I mean, we get, it's just constant, continuous football all the time, and I feel like most of the time I should be paying to be able to do this job.
How do you balance, or do you even try to balance what you do so you're not completely consumed with what's going on? Do you have an outlet, something that you can either get away for an hour and a half, where it's not totally grinding the game, or is it, I just love it so much that I don't feel like I'm working and I can continue to do it, I don't feel like I'm grinding?
That's definitely a part of it. It doesn't feel like grinding. I mean, just very fortunate to be able to do what I love and work hard at it. And most of that is because I love it so much that you want to work hard at it. So very, very blessed to be doing something I love. As far as, you know, what the outlet is, I mean, there's really only one for me, and I was reminded of that this week. You know, as the players came back and we started practicing on the field, I really related it to like a homecoming. I mean, there's twice a year, the start of the spring sessions and the first day of training camp, where it feels like a reunion, like a family reunion.
Yeah.
You're so excited. You're going to see guys that you haven't seen for a couple months, just like the old family reunion back in Ohio when my family used to go there. You know, kids are climbing trees. Grandma and grandpa are over in the corner telling stories. Mom and dad, fortunately, they're alive, and you know, they're cooking dishes up.
And you and John are wrestling somewhere.
Yeah, we're wrestling, and we're the ones climbing trees. And you know, late night there's a poker game. But you know, the point is, it's a homecoming, and if we could somehow bottle that enthusiasm and that energy that we have on that first day, that first week, and do it better than the rest of the teams in the league, then we'd really have something. But then my point was that, you know, I get a homecoming every night because you go home and I see a wife that I can't wait to see, and two little girls come running up and hug me, and that's my outlet. That's that's where I go.
My guess was over-under was a half an hour. And I'm going to see if I took the under. Of course, I made the line, so it's hard to make a line and bet into it. But when the schedule came out, how long did it take you to put in some film on the Green Bay Packers?
That's exactly what we did. It was it was pretty quick, and that's what we've been studying, and that's really what I want our team focused on is winning our first game. The NFL is a league where, you know, the most important game is your next game, and that's our next game, and That's the one that we have to figure out a way to win. And, you know, people that talk about, well, you did great last year, and, you know, this year you guys are gonna win it all. And, you know, our answer to that is, you know, we're gonna concentrate and do our best and find a way to win the opener.
I was out there when they stuck the shovel in the ground down in Santa Clara, which looks like it's going to be just a fantastic new football venue. I don't know, Jim, if the construction union would allow you to have a shovel in one hand and a sword in another hand, but I guess if anybody could do it, you could probably do it.
Well, it just feels like what we're doing. You're doing it all the time because you're trying to build your team. And while you're trying to build your team, you have everybody that's trying to fight you and beat you, and they're looking for your weaknesses, and you're building and fighting at the same time. And it's really, if you're down here in Santa Clara, we're a football oasis inside of a construction zone, and it that's what it feels like. I mean, you know, here we are, we're fighting to get better, and we're also, you know, building our walls around us. So. It fortifying our position, so it's almost biblical to me.
I don't know, Jim. When I see you if I saw you with a shovel and a sword, I'm thinking you'd be fighting with both of them.
Say that again.
If I saw you with a shovel and a sword, one in each hand, I think you'd probably be fighting with both the shovel and the sword.
Well, that's the age old question. And I'd be interested in your thoughts. If you could only have one, say you could only have one. Let's make it a shield instead of a sword. If you could only have a shield.
I'll take the shield.
Or you'll take the shield.
I'll take the shield, absolutely.
So would I.
Because I can turn the shield. I think I can turn the shield more so into a weapon than I can turn the sword into a defense mechanism.
That's exactly how I think as well. You know, I bet if you ask. But if you ask five people that, four of them would tell you they'll take the sword. But I think you're dead on right on that, and you take the shield. Build your defense.
Absolutely.
Then you can use your defense as a weapon as well.
Absolutely. Talking to Jim Harbaugh, the head coach of the San Francisco 49ers. Tell us a little bit about the draft, specifically the first two picks, A.J. Jenkins, LaMichael James. Was that something going into the draft that you, Trent Baalke, and the scouts thought, this is something we need. We need more guys in this team that can get big chunks of yardage. I don't want to say that's a reason you didn't get to the Super Bowl, but certainly you didn't have the big explosive plays in the Giants game you did in the Saints game. Was that something going in that you said, this is something we need to address? Or were they just the two best players that fell to you at those points?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing to say is that we have a team that we feel is a big, strong, fast team, how we're built right now. And whatever position group that we drafted into, there was no glaring need, Tom, mm-hmm. that we felt like we had to address in this draft. But it's also true that you know, AJ and LaMichael James were two players that we highly coveted. And you know, we felt like we had a chance to get AJ in at the end of the first, but no later. We felt like LaMichael James would go in the mid second round, and then we were static when he was sitting there with our second pick, and he was on the board. So you know, that's the way we went, and they're not just fast. Both of those guys are not just fast. They're impeccable on the field. And they're great guys off the field. I can't wait to have them both in our building. And we'll see them next Thursday, a week from today.
What do you take from being a player and watching coaches that you played for? Stuff that worked, stuff that didn't work? Because, you know, you played long enough where if a guy uses the same message over and over and again, guys start to look around the room like, okay, I've heard this one before. I know where we're going with this one, even though it may be valid, if sometimes it loses its bite a little bit. Were there things you took as a player that you saw coaches do or not do that you incorporate into what you do as a coach?
Yes, that's had great coaches. I was so blessed and fortunate to you know, play for living legends at the time, Bo Schembechler, Mike Ditka, Lindy Infante, Ted Marchabrota, was raised by my dad. I mean, there's, you know, the best coach right there. So many things that, you know, really you're not trying to copy, but just become part of your DNA. I think the thing I think is most important for a coach is, you know, it's that it's about the game and it's about doing things, you know, that you know what you're doing, that you put players in a position to be successful, and you can think your way through to success. Those are things I always respected and valued in coaches, and many more things. But people that loved it, loved the game, you know, and allowed players and allowed themselves to, you know, show enthusiasm for the game and had joy for the game and had a deep abiding respect for the game and, you know, many more things. But
well, let me ask you, here's one thing I loved about, and my two favorite coaches that I played for were Hall of Famers, Don Nelson, Golden State, and Lute Olson down there at Arizona. But the one thing, and I think you do this, I think you subscribe to this, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, is that one of my favorite traits of a coach is if you want to rip me and you want to jump me or you want to get on me, do it in the confines of the locker room. I mean, you let it all hang out, whatever you need to say to me, or even if it's on the sidelines. But when you talk to the media, talk to the press, then those coaches, I think the best ones, they'll stand there and take the bullets because they're the captain of the ship. It's like, okay, that was me. I did this. I did that. I did this. Then in the locker room, you know, you can go ahead and let a guy have it. I mean, as a player, I don't know how it works as a coach, Jim, but as a player, I always respected that type of coach.
Well, I mean, you said a lot of things there. I mean, I think when you're, you know, a talented media person like yourself, I mean, you can boil it down to one thing. And for me, it's a little more complicated. You know, I love the little things. You know, I love all the little things, and I never think that it's one thing that you know, ever makes a difference. I really believe it's a thousand little things that most people don't think mean much. The minutiae of details, but those little things all add up to make all the difference. And you know, as far as your point, I mean, I think you're right. I agree with a lot what you said. You know, for me personally, you know, when I played, and I believe this as a coach and a teacher that you know, when you're, you know, you can get on a guy, you know, to say it the way you said it, or you know, or just, you know, teach them and you know, show them what to do, tell them what to do, you know, and then let them do, and then, you know, you tell them what they did wrong, what they did right, and that's coaching, that's teaching. And if you do get on a guy, you know, the big thing is to, you know, is to get with them and let them know that you believe in them and you know, explain why you were telling them what you were telling them. And I think as long as people know that you believe in them, then they're going to believe in themselves. But it's when they, you know, when they sense that you don't believe them and in them or don't care about them, you know, as a player or a person. Then, if they start to not believe in themselves, then they got no chance, and they if they've already hit a wall, and then you don't believe in them, they don't believe in themselves, then, you know, they have a chance to spiral way down.
Yeah, I say this only half in jest because I think it could possibly be true, but when you decided to be a team manager for the University of Indiana during a NCAA college basketball game, did they have to actually go through compliance to find out if that was okay with the NCAA?
Not that I'm aware of. not that I'm aware of. Maybe common sense actually ruled the day there.
Not in college, but not in college sports, Jim. You know that's not the case.
Well, you know, it's amazing. I mean, anybody can relate to this these days. I think this is really true that, you know, when everybody makes you know, has these meetings and comes up with these great plans, if if people would just insert a little common sense from time to time, I think we'd all be better off. But I'll tell you this: you know, I played high school basketball, and I watch a lot of basketball on TV, and I think I know basketball. And I sat on the bench there at that Indiana game. And I really realized I don't know squat about basketball, and they're calling out picks and different play calls and posts, and you know I don't know anything about defense and offensive basketball. I was amazed with just being, because I'd never sat on a bench of a college or pro basketball game, and you know the level of. You know, schematics just it blew me away. I was so impressed.
Being that I have a brother myself, and I make my parents roll their eyes on occasion, he's 10 years younger than me, and we will get into wrestling matches for no other reason that we're brothers, and that's kind of what brothers do. When's the last time you had a wrestling match with your brother?
I would say 1989 would be my best guess.
20 years ago?
I figured
you guys would get into it before. I figured you guys.
23 years ago. Yeah, I was probably 22 or 23, and he was 25. We were on a family trip in Jacksonville, Florida. We're out in the water. We're out wading in the water out there and body surfing or whatever we were doing. And then the next thing I know, you know, we're kind of wrestling around, and it was wrestling in the ocean.
Isn't it funny? Because it's funny. I do the same with my brother. It's like kind of, it's just kind of silly. It's like the alpha dog thing. You're like, yeah, I know you're younger, and I know you think you can take me now, but you can't. It starts off, and then after a while, not gets so intense to where you're going to hurt each other, but it gets a little more intense maybe than you wanted it to. And I know it always got more intense than my parents wanted it to.
Yeah, there was. I think that was just more screwing around, me and my brother. But yeah, we both wanted to win that one. There was a basketball game actually with my brother-in-law Tom Crean, and my dad, and my son Jay at the time, who was probably 13. We were in a 2-on-2 basketball game in Milwaukee when Tom was coaching at Marquette. That one got pretty heated. Tom and I didn't talk to each other for the rest of the trip, which was about 3 days.
Who won?
Well, me and my son Jay.
Of course you did. Of course you did.
Beat him on his home court. I think that's the last thing that I told Tom, and that kind of put the nail in the coffin on us talking the rest of the last 3 days of our trip.
And
I beat you on your own court.
And I'm going to guess you haven't given him a rematch yet, have you?
We have not played since.
There you go. There you go. Walk off the court a champ. Hey, Jim, really appreciate the time. It was good catching up with you.
Yeah.
Let's do it again soon, and enjoy the rest of what little offseason you guys have, which I know isn't a whole lot. And we'll look forward to catching up with you maybe when camp starts.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. You brought a smile to my face, and I got to admit, I was a little down. I was a little in a funk there. So appreciate talking to you.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it, man. Head coach of the San Francisco 49ers, Jim Harbaugh, right here on the Sports Leader.